CFO Radio is the only radio show that explores the passion of today's CFO and examines the innermost thoughts of the financial world, financial perspectives of tomorrow. Welcome to CFO Radio. I'm Lorraine Chilvers. Lee, if you'd like to introduce our sponsors.
Absolutely. Today's show is sponsored by Delaney Consulting, LLC, providing financial leadership to fast-growing companies, interim management, and executive placement for the finance function. Visit DelaneyLLC.com and learn why 100% of their clients describe Delaney services as outstanding and excellent. Also, the SAP Business by Design solution is a single integrated business management solution that delivers the best of SAP software on demand, offering the benefits of larger applications without the need for a costly IT infrastructure. And Financial Executives International, the preeminent association for CFOs and other financial executives. We are sponsored by the Atlanta chapter.
And in this week's CFO Radio News, the debate over paying whistleblowers to tell all and be paid for doing so is rising. This month, the SEC announced the intention to pay whistleblowers quite high amounts of cash if they go directly to the SEC to report potential fraud and misdoings within companies. The commission proposed rules that would pay informants from 10 to 30% of the amount recovered. And the debate as to whether to pay those who identify such act still goes on. For more information, go to the SEC website, www.sec.gov. Well, today, Thornton Howard joins us to discuss the role of the CFO. Welcome to the show, Thornton.
Thank you.
Well, Thornton, you are the Chief Financial Officer of Astral Brands, which sells three brands of health and beauty products through multiple channels. Prior to joining Astral Brands, you were the finance manager with Home Depot in their supply chain development unit and also a controller with Accenture. You are a CMA and have an MBA and were a double major in accounting and finance for your undergraduate degree. Wow, you really went for the heavy one there. Yes. Well, Thornton, in your current role, you oversee the finance function for a very fast-growing company, and you've come up through the ranks pretty quickly. Tell us a little bit about your background and your early career experience. Why did you choose the path, and what led you to being the CFO you are today?
Well, I actually started out wanting to be an accountant, and started out my undergrad in accounting. Got about three-fourths away through that and decided this may be not what I want to do long-term, so I decided to go ahead and get the finance major as well. And I was far enough along with accounting where I ended up with the double accounting and finance major. My first role right out of college was actually an accounting-type role with Accenture. As a controller. A few years into that, I was moved into more of a financial planning and analysis role, where I learned a lot about budgeting and forecasting and pricing. After a few years with Accenture, I wanted to try something new, so I moved to Home Depot and was able to get an operational finance role in supply chain, where I really learned a lot about distributions, logistics, and systems. And I think having the combination of all three areas of having that controller, foundation experience, the FP&A experience, as well as the operational side, has really helped me get to where I am today. And the diversity of those areas has really been a big help.
Well, let me ask you, I think of Accenture perhaps in the more traditional way of Accenture being a consulting company. Do they still have a controller practice or that kind of a role?
They do. They do, as a matter of fact. They have their own internal finance and accounting department, which handles the finance and accounting for the company itself.
I see. So, and then in the financial planning, you were obviously very heavy analytical. Rather than counting the beans from the past, you're projecting the future.
Exactly.
Was that a little bit more exciting for you?
I think so. I think I see accounting as a necessary evil in finance. I think to be a good finance practitioner, you need to have a solid base in accounting and really understand accounting. I think understanding what the number means, how they can be a little bit different, whether somebody uses a different inventory valuation system or something like that, really helps in a finance role when you're looking at kind of different organizations and assessing things.
And in your role today as CFO, you're overseeing all elements of that. As CFO for the company, you have been quite instrumental in leading the company's transformation in the last few years. Is there anything that stands out as a significant turn in the growth of the business for you and for the time of Astral Brands? Maybe tell us the lessons that you might have learned in managing the finances of a growing company.
I think really thing it's just constant perseverance and believing in what you do. I don't know if there's any one significant turn in the business. It's such a concerted effort over, you know, over a time period. Really, the one lesson I've learned, I guess, goes back to the saying that cash is king, and that, you know, I think it is critical for any finance person to really understand cash flow management. Understand, you know, their receivables, their payables, their inventory, and to be able to manage that. And it's an ever diligent process.
Are you an inventory rich company?
We are. We've gotten pretty good. We got a little bit heavy with inventory, and I think we've done a great job of kind of working that down to a good level where we want to be now.
That being said, your background is also in logistics. Have you found that, obviously, for any company that's selling product, you've got to be able to get it into the hands of the customer. Have you found that your logistics foundation has helped you with that?
Logistics foundation has definitely helped. That, you know, that is a big thing. We do a lot of shipment. We do a lot of parcel shipment, small package shipment, as well as truckload and LTL shipments. So we have a very kind of diverse supply chain.
Now, you've used a couple of terms there. For those listeners that are not familiar, explain some of those terms.
So the partial shipment would be your typical FedEx, kind of smaller individual unit shipment. LTL is less than truckload. So those are trucks, but you're not really taking up a whole truck.
And then so you're buying space on a truck.
Exactly. And then you have truckload, which is when you actually fill a truck. And we like truckload shipments. We like to fill trucks.
Yeah, more sales, right?
Exactly.
Now, very often a company such as yourself may have the dilemma of do you have your own trucks versus do you outsource it? Do you outsource that?
We do. We outsource all of that.
So you've got somebody else having the QA over. We said we'd get it there by 10 a.m. or 3 p.m. We're going to do that.
Right.
Takes a little bit of burden off you, but helps you maybe manage your cost structure a little better.
It does. And there are a lot of great companies out there that also provide services like freight bill auditing that we use as well.
Talk to us a little bit about that. What is that?
That is, there are a lot of kind of ancillary charges that go along with a freight bill. And sometimes when you ship a ton of packages and you get a binder in the mail that is essentially your invoice, and you know, no one in your company has time to go through that and look at that and make sure those charges are right. There are companies out there that will do that for you.
And do you now can you get that data electronically so that you can get an analytical whiz, pile through it and look for trends and so forth?
You can, but you really need to understand, I guess, a lot of the rules that goes along with how those charges are calculated and things like that. So I think it's better to have somebody in the industry that does that as a third party. You can really see some cost savings by using those kind of companies.
So would that be, do you bring them in once a year? Are they part of your normal practice of business? How does that work?
It is part of our normal practice of business. So every month, they will go through all the audit bills, and then they receive back a portion of what they find. And more often than not, there are, because there's so many transactions, they're not all going to be perfect, and there are savings to be had there.
Wow. So that helps you keep your costs low.
Yep.
Obviously. Well, in the transformation that you've had, you've grown very fast organically. And how has the company adopted those new sales? Has it been different and new sales distribution channels? I know personally that you advertise on television. You have very successful websites. And I think now that you have some of your product lines, you have, if you will, customer sales reps that actually would maybe even go house to house.
Yes. So we, we're in a variety of channels, and we're ever expanding that. We're going kind of deeper into what we call our current distribution, which is, you know, really building up where we already are. And then we're also looking at new distribution as well. So we're kind of attacking it on both fronts to keep the growth going and moving forward.
And you've also added new product.
And we do, yes. Yes, we.
How many product lines do you have?
We have three main brands. We have our Pure Minerals line, which is a kind of a color cosmetics line that we sell through retail channels such as Dillard's Department Stores or Ulta Specialty Stores. We have a line called Cosmetics, which is a more high-end line that we sell through spas and doctor's offices. And we have a line called Alouette, which is more your traditional kind of in-home party model where you have independent beauty consultants. So we think, you know, that we don't have a lot of channel conflict between the lines, which works out well.
And is it different product that is sold to different
channels? They are different products, but they are all in the health and beauty category.
Yeah, interesting. Well, you manage the finance function, but what I found in researching your role was that you also manage accounting, all the information technology, and you manage the human resource functions. So pretty broad structure there in terms of burden for you, but the benefit may be the variety that you get. What are some of the key benefits of managing all of these companies for a company of your size and stage of growth?
Well, it definitely really keeps things interesting when you have all those departments. But really, I think what it helps is it really helps you get a better sense of the business. When you have to dive into more areas of the organization, and that in turn helps you make better decisions. You know, I think HR and finance are linked pretty strongly because payroll is normally one of the biggest expenditures on a company's P&L, and human capital is so important to the success of a business.
Interestingly enough, a lot of our guests talk about the human capital function. There are challenges sometimes in recruiting the right people. There are sometimes challenges when unemployment is low, there's challenges in keeping a hold of people. In the U.S. economy, we don't have that challenge, and a lot of CFOs are finding that employees are staying put. It's giving not only companies but the employees the ability to go back to some of the grassroots of loyalty and sticking with what you have, if you will. Are there any particular programs that you have or might suggest in terms of that human capital function, with it being the largest line item on the P&L? Obviously, it's a cost, but there's a lot of emotional aspects to managing human resources.
There is, and I think we're a very open company, very open door policy. I think anybody that works in the office would have no issue if they had any issues coming to talk to me or to talk to my boss. So I think having that kind of open door policy where people, you know, aren't intimidated to raise concerns is very important. We do things. We have we have a monthly town hall meeting. We'll all get together. You know, we'll have cake and things like that. Recognize people and give them recognition. And I think all those little things really make a difference.
And you're a privately held company, is that correct?
We are.
That being said, one of the challenges for the CFO is to what extent do you provide information to your employees? Is that a struggle that perhaps you go through?
It's a little bit of a struggle, but at the same time, I think we have a very good executive leadership team that we kind of dive into the numbers with. So, you know, we need to keep the people engaged so they understand what they need to do. They need to know where the business is at. And so I think it's important to share that information with your senior leadership team in the organization.
Now, being a fast-growing company, things are moving, things are changing. Do you typically look for entrepreneurial types? And I ask that with the realm that we tend not to be very entrepreneurial in the finance function.
And it's a constant balance, I think. You want to be entrepreneurial and not stifle creativity, but at the same time, you have to have some processes in place, or else, you know, things can go bad real fast. So it is a constant balancing act between kind of the bureaucratic, process-oriented functions and the creativity. And
which one's going to win out?
You try to find it in the middle. It's hard, but we try to balance it.
Yeah. Well, you've also, during your tenure with the company, drawn on a lot of your experiences, and you come with a very strong IT background experience. You've helped clean up the company's systems. We've talked a little bit about talent and talent management. You've brought in some great people to support the company's future. Was there anything specific in terms of your change and the transformation that you helped the company through that made the operations of the company easier?
I think putting in good processes. You know, before, as you grow as a company, you start off as a smaller company where I think the creativity, the entrepreneurship definitely wins out. And then as you start to grow, you start to shift a little bit more to having more processes in place. And
I tend to think of the $100 million mark as being the switch.
So that's a good proxy.
Does your accounting system change? Does your you've implemented new accounting as well as IT? Was that part of your transformation?
We've upgraded the accounting system we've had, and then we've also upgraded the human capital that we have in that area.
So you've got more people that have the knowledge to be mm-hmm. able to do that. Now, in terms of the analytical role, obviously, you've mentioned the backward-looking bean count, the forward-looking person who helps you with the future growth of the company. Have you brought on more analytical power in that transformation?
I've had to be that analytical power to some degree in the transformation right now. In the future, we would definitely like to bring on more analytical power, but we've... you know, we've really do things ground up from a budget perspective. You know, really kind of look and see how we're trending, make sure that things seem reasonable, and have scenarios in place so when things don't work out, you don't get yourself in trouble.
Is there a particular lesson learned from that?
I don't know if there's a particular lesson learned. I think it's just an ever diligent, hardworking process of always being prepared.
Now, to what extent you've upgraded your systems, do you have a sense of when your next growth will be? Or maybe are you stable? Do you look at a 1, 3, 5, 10-year time frame?
We hope our growth will continue to accelerate in the very near term. And as we grow, that will require some new systems and things like that. It's an interesting industry that we're in. Where, you know, things can happen very fast.
Well, that being said, part of the reason I'm focusing on the IT element is that in our as we look at the role of the CFO, many of our guests refer to the changing role of the CFO and the fact that it's very much more information systems, data management, and all about the accuracy and the timeliness, and the best way to do that is to have an automated data management system. Tell us a little bit more about your management of the IT function.
So I think as the CFO, you know, you want to go back to your core, your fundamental, you know, working capital management, capital structure, things like that. But I think what's happened is, IT has become such an important part of every organization that there's basically an endless supply of solutions and demands on your IT department. And because of that, I think the IT department is probably the most in-demand shared service department in many organizations, and there's only a finite amount of resources. So I think where the CFO comes in is really to help prioritize those requests, and they probably have the best understanding to look across the business and see what IT changes will impact the business in the greatest way. You know, I think the business still needs IT people, and I don't try to, you know, I'm adamantly not an IT person is a strong point. So I think it's still important to have a great IT team, which we do. I think the CFO's role is more to make sure that they're being utilized in the best way.
Now, many companies look to outsource when they get to the size that you are. I certainly don't want to ask you to share anything that is confidential in nature, but to what extent would you potentially look at an outsourcing versus an insourcing? And the reason that I say that, very often we look at things like cloud computing, we look at various elements of should we host, should someone else host, and there's often a risk or a security aspect and a benefit through somebody else doing that, and there can be a cost structure stabilization around that.
No, I agree, and I think, you know, to this day we do outsource some of our IT work, and I think companies can find that balance where they have their internal IT team, but their internal IT team, if it's the right size, will probably feel stretched too thin, And so to supplement that, sometimes you do have to outsource some of the IT work. And I think that's cost beneficial and better for the company as a whole to be in that position where you're not overstaffed at IT and you take a little bit of money and maybe outsource some things if you feel that the return's there.
Just like you have with the trucking.
Exactly.
Is there any particular challenge related to IT given, wow, the last 10, I guess 15 years ago, we didn't have the WW anything. One of the benefits for you and your business is that you can now sell through the web. Is that also a challenge?
It is a challenge. It is a challenge, and especially having three distinct lines. That's three distinct websites. You know, those constantly have to keep those up to date, you know, with new and freshness. Constantly have to keep them up. And
so a customer from one may not necessarily buy from the other product line.
Exactly. So it does create unique challenges, and you know, and as more and IT solutions have become available, there's much more demands on your IT department.
Now, do you find that having that capability for the customer to come through the website, does it give you? You said cash is king.
Yes.
A little earlier. Does that give you closer access or quicker access to cash?
It does. It does, because those are credit card transactions. So those will, you know, hit your bank account in 1 or 2 days, as opposed to if you, you know, sell to a terms customer where it might be, you know, 30 to 40 days.
So that being said, you probably have a pretty good relationship with your credit card processors.
We do. We do. We get a lot of calls for people wanting our credit card processing business.
That being said, there's a lot of them out there.
There are
some small ones. There are some large ones. Tell us a little bit about the challenges of credit card processing itself. A lot of businesses today, whereas they've been going through what I might call a channel or a distributed means by which to access the customer, a lot of them are going direct to the customer now. So what lessons learned perhaps from that process?
Really to shop around and find the right credit card processor. It's a very competitive industry. If you've been with a processor for a while now, it's something, you know, most people don't even think about. But if you, you know, with a little bit of research, you can find some very reputable companies. Just give them a call and say, you know, we're interested in changing providers, and they'll ask for, you know, your last three month statements, and they'll give you a quote, and 9 times out of 10, they'll be able to save you money.
Is it easy to change the processor?
It depends. There are things called payment gateways. And so if there are only a couple of payment gateways, and if your processor that you're looking to switch is on the same payment gateway as your current processor, then it's a very easy changeover.
And if they're not?
If they're not, it's a little bit more difficult. I would recommend trying to, because you can. There are only a few payment gateways, so it's easy to find multiple processors on whatever gateway you're probably using.
And what is the typical time? You talked a little bit about cash is king, cash translating from inventory to your working capital. What should a company expect? Let's say they're starting to sell. How long does it take between the inventory being in the customer's hand? Or, in fact, let me back up. From the click on the internet, what is the typical process for that becoming cash in your bank account through a processor?
From a click on the internet, probably 3 days.
Mm. So, to that extent, do you need to make sure that your distribution and the shipment is in hand at that point?
Exactly, yes. And so those we can get out fairly fast.
Is that a requirement of the cash being deposited, that the customer has the product, or is there any kind of dependency?
It is, yes. The customer, you should definitely have shipped the product before you press that button to charge their credit card.
So it's all one of timeliness.
Yes.
Well, that being said, you've seen the role of your being the CFO change. A lot of these different things that we're talking about, you've brought that transformation around. Are there any other aspects of leading the finance role, for example, risk or risk management, that perhaps, I don't know, maybe keep you up at night?
I do have a 10-month-old that keeps me up at night. But I think that, you know, I try not to let it worry me too much. I think that, you know, preparation goes a long way in reducing worry. And so I think it's hard work, but if you're prepared and you do your homework and you put together plans, put together scenarios and things like that, you'll be ready for what happens.
How have you improved your risk and focus forward on the analytical structure? One of the biggest risks for the CFO is that the sales don't come through from a financial perspective. And then, of course, you have a cost structure and an employee base that takes a lot longer to shift that. Seeing into the future is never easy. Any suggestions there?
It's not, one of the things in our industry is we try to do a lot of variable-based costs. Obviously, the more variable-based costs you have, the less you'll be impacted by a sales decrease. Also, one of the big challenges is inventory management. You want to have the inventory there if you get the big sale, but at the same time, you don't want to have to buy the inventory if the big sale doesn't come through. So really kind of working with the sales team, kind of understanding their mentality. It's almost like psychology because they'll always tell you 130%. So it's knowing, who tells you 130, who's going to tell you what they really think and who's going to tell you 200% and making sure that your forecasts are in line with that. So you really need to be kind of at the hip with your sales force and understand their mentality.
So that challenge, how do you translate that in from a system data gathering? Do you have some kind of reporting system where the salespeople put in the sales and the prospect, and that then leads through to some kind of financial database, and that then leads through to your forecasting?
We do, right. And then, given the maybe some history or some other things like that, we might temper what they submit, but we definitely want to start getting those projections from your sales field and then go back and look at some analytics about history, things like that, and maybe adjust them up or down accordingly.
So is there an employee emotional side when they're given a number of, I don't know, let's throw a number out, 1 million or 5 million, and you tweak their 5 million down to 4.6?
No, we normally won't tell them. We'll tell them to aim for 5. So.
Keep them high, huh?
Keep them high, that's right.
Aim high. Well, we talked a little bit about this in the last element. If that's not something that keeps you up at night, what does keep you up at night in terms of your role as a CFO? Is there anything particular?
Really, I think the human capital management, just making sure that your employees are happy and that you have the right people in the right positions. Because I think having the right people in the right positions, you can overcome a whole lot.
Are you growing and expanding your headcount?
We are currently not growing and expanding our headcount.
You're pretty stable.
We're pretty
at this
stable.
Point.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess you have been adding headcount, so you're at a good place. Now, a lot of these small companies that we talk with have a little bit of a dilemma in terms of when they come to add that headcount. Rather wish that there were some maybe tax credits or job credits, and there's not a lot of those going out there right now. And I think even the training credits are minimized at this point in time. Is there anything in that regard that perhaps our listeners may want to know about?
I believe we haven't actually used it, but I believe there's a Work for Georgia credit that you can get through the state where they will actually pay a worker, I think, for 6 weeks if you're registered. You have to register with them, and I think you register with the Georgia Department of Labor, and they'll pay for a worker for 6 weeks to come and kind of train with your company in the hopes that they will get a permanent position at the end of that.
And that's taking somebody that currently is out of work and re-entering them into the workplace.
Exactly.
So that perhaps if there are some listeners that are unemployed, they may want to go check that program out with the Department of Labor.
Yes, because yes, employees would, we're starting to look into that program because obviously it sounds like a win-win for everybody.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit about growth. Where does the first impetus for that come? Is it adding new salespeople such that now you have sales and maybe that creates a spike of cost without the sale? How do you approach growth in the company?
Really, I think we approach it line by line because each of our channels is a little bit different. I think when we look at our pure minerals line, we want to focus more on kind of in-store events and things like that to really get the consumer excited, get the product in their hand. For our Alouette line, it's making sure we have the right incentives for people to have these shows and party shows and become Alouette consultants. So we're looking at ways to do that. And then for our cosmetics line, I think that potentially could be someplace where if we put more feet on the street or more salespeople, we could see some growth there as well.
So the challenge therein is you're looking to have future profit, but the immediate is additional cost.
To some degree. I think there's also, you know, you've also got the ever ongoing negotiation with potentially new customers and potentially large customers that don't require any upfront initial investment. So I think there's a wide range of opportunities to growth. So it's just about kind of focusing on all of them.
In that regards, as you grow and need new future capital investment, companies that are privately held very often in today's economy are having challenges in their typical funding sources, the banks and so forth, all of a sudden are looking at them with a very different shade of glasses than they had 2 and 3 and 5 years ago. What are you seeing in that regards in terms of that financing? Are the financing institutions asking for more information, higher levels of guarantees? What are you seeing in your seat?
I think the money is still out there. I think that there is definitely more information required, and I think that you'll end up paying a higher price for that money. I think the funding's there. It's just the cost has gone up.
Is it? Do you think it's as easy to go get capital right now?
It is. It is definitely not as easy, but I think it's easier than people think. I think it just costs more at the end of the day.
So pennies on the profit margin.
Exactly.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the human capital. It's woven a thread all the way through. The U.S. is still experiencing some pretty hard times, and clearly you are a U.S.-based company. Has this had any particular impact on, I guess, the availability of resources, and you want to get the right people in for growing the company?
I don't think it's hindered the growth of the company per se. I think one of the silver linings, which I think you mentioned, was that we do see less turnover, so our retention rates are higher right now. So you don't have that knowledge loss when someone leaves your company. So it's hard, and it's definitely a soft economy. But the silver lining of that is your human capital tends to remain in place.
Now, is there more poaching from other companies going on?
There's a little bit of poaching from other companies, but I like to think we have a pretty good work environment. So.
Yeah, and people obviously want to come to a growing company.
Exactly.
That's an easy attraction.
Yes.
Well, we have a tradition on the show to ask about the CFO tip of the month. What is yours?
I would probably say just to get involved in everything you can. The more diverse your experiences you have, the better. Go to meetings you normally wouldn't go to. There was that undercover boss TV show, which you don't have to be undercover, but go out in the field and do the role of other departments and things like that, and just get a better understanding of the organization. Kind of broaden your experience, and I think all that kind of comes together and helps you make better decisions
with customers as well.
Oh yes.
To what extent are you facing with the customer? Do you go out and see your major customers?
I actually, I guess it was last month, spent some time with our customer service department taking customer service calls.
So, wow, you were on the end of the phone call.
I was on the end of the phone call.
How was that?
It was a very interesting experience. It really was. And actually, I learned a lot of the challenges that our customer service department faces and what they do. And it really gave me kind of a better understanding and appreciation for that.
Well, that's fabulous. You really are an active working CFO. You're in the top and you're in the dirt.
So,
well, thank you very much, Thornton. This has been an absolute pleasure having you a guest on the show. That was a great tip. So we thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks to Thornton Howard, our guest today, for sharing his innermost thoughts on the role of the CFO. Thank you also to our contributors for the SEC document. You can go to sec.gov. And to our sponsors, Delaney Consulting, providing CFOs and controllers to Fortune 1000 companies and small growing businesses. For more information about Delaney, please go to www.delaneyllc.com. Thanks go also to SAP Business by Design, the software as a service business management solution for small or medium-sized companies. Please see further information at sap.com/SME. And thanks also to Financial Executive International, the preeminent association for CFOs and finance executives. They can be found at financialexecutives.org. This and other thought leadership from today's CFO is available at your computer, cforadio.com. If you are a CFO or know another that would like to be a guest on the show, you can contact us via the web. Thank you for listening to CFO Radio. This is Lorraine Chilvers signing off. Until next time.